Okay. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for waking up this morning. We're happy to start off with 3M. We have David Meline, who's the relatively new Chief Financial Officer. I think most of you probably know Matt Ginter, who's been the longtime Head of Investor Relations. I think we're going to try today to do some of the same stuff as we did yesterday, use the audience response system where we can and get some real-time feedback. There'll be some people that will wait to do questions. There'll be some people that saunter in here in the next 15 minutes, I'm sure. I know that from the feedback we got yesterday, most people really appreciate at least the data we get from the polling, although obviously the actual polling itself is a little bit of a pain in the neck. We get it. From 3M is going through a fairly substantial transition period right now with both CEO and CFO changes in the last, I'll call it 12 months. I know Inge's going to be taking over shortly in the next several months, and George stepping down. I think it's always interesting when you have these transition periods. It's normally a great opportunity for companies, obviously, to tweak their model, change directions, if you will, or accelerate or decelerate. I think the timing is great to have David here and talk at least preliminarily about what 3M can do to either enhance its growth rate or enhance its ability to reinvest cash or all the above. Why don't we start off, David, with a bit of a state of the union on, not everybody, I'm sure, was on your earnings call, but a review of what you're seeing around the world, both macro-wise and anything specific to 3M that you think is relevant, and then we'll dive into more specific questions.
Sure. Thank you very much, Scott. Good morning, everybody. Very pleased to be here this morning representing 3M. We're excited about what we're looking at in 2012 and beyond. The company, as we go through what it will be a transition, as you said, a very exciting one. The company, in my view, has never been in better condition. If you look at R&D, the labs are delivering results and products to us like we've never seen before. This year, we expect about 33% of our sales will be from products that have been introduced within the last five years. The company is gaining market share. We're increasing continually our geographic coverage. We continue to expand into adjacent markets based on both the very strong pipeline from the labs as well as through acquisitions. We're well down the path on regional self-sufficiency. We continue to increase the depth of our capability from both a manufacturing and an R&D perspective in our global and international locations. Last year was the first year that we had more than half of our capital was invested internationally outside the U.S. Finally, operational excellence remains a very important pillar for the company. Hoshin-Kanri principles as well as Lean Six Sigma are at the core of that activity. What you see is as we have greater depth of capability with our manufacturing internationally, this becomes a very important tool, not only in our core U.S. operations, but importantly around the world. I'm excited about having Inge take over as CEO. Actually, his first day as CEO will be tomorrow, as George's birthday is today. Inge's been with the 3M for over 30 years. He knows the company certainly inside and out, and he's worked very closely with George over the last years that George has been with the company, both to develop and implement our current strategy as he was operating for those years. First, running our international businesses, which are now about two-thirds of the business globally, as well as most recently as COO. Inge believes that we have the right strategy in place for the company going forward, and that we've got, frankly, a lot of unfinished business that we need to complete. If you look at 2011, we had strong results as a company in what was an increasingly challenged calendar year. We delivered 11% sales overall for the year with $30 billion of revenue. We had 5% organic revenue growth, being 4% from volume and 1% on price. Developing markets were up 14% for the year and now represent 34% of our total sales. China, we had good sales and strong income through the year, although we did, like others, see slowing in the second half. For China overall for the year, we were up 12% and 22% for the year if you exclude our optical business. In the fourth quarter, China was up 5% and 12% excluding optical. The economy was tougher in the second half. We have an exposure to the electronics segment, which slowed down, and also obviously, we have a significant presence in Western Europe. Despite that slowdown, we did have good fourth quarter results and overall through the year. In the fourth quarter, our revenue was up 6% at $7.1 billion. Operating income was up 5% with 19% margins. If you look at the calendar year overall, the company delivered 21% margins, and all six of our business sectors delivered margins over 20%. We had strong performance across the board. EPS was up 6% at $5.96 a share, and free cash flow conversion was 91% for the year. We invested $1.4 billion in capital expenditures last year, and we returned $4.3 billion to shareholders via dividends and buyback, which was over an 80% increase from the prior year. In 2012, we do expect the economy to continue to be slower in the first half, followed by a pickup in the second half. We've indicated we are intending to deliver $6.25-$6.50 in terms of our EPS this year, with organic revenue in the range of 2%-6% for the year. We're also focused, as we always are, on the bottom line. We're targeting 21%-22.5% margins in 2012 with a 29.5% tax rate. We do expect, as I said, the first half to be most challenging. Specifically, we see the electronics business, the inventory correction continues, and we also have the toughest comp for our optical business in the first quarter. Certainly Western Europe, we expect to be challenging through the year. In Q1, we also have called out that we have some costs that are one-time costs that are included in our outlook for the quarter and for the calendar year. That being $0.04 a share related to a U.S. voluntary early retirement program that we just conducted, as well as some select restructuring in some of our mature markets. In summary, we had a good 2011 for the company. We expect to perform very well in 2012. It's more important for us right now in this kind of a market. We find that innovating and investing in the business to really differentiate 3M is really a critical thing to do at this time and also gives us a chance to really differentiate ourselves. As I said, the company's in great shape, and we think we're very well poised for the future. With that, Scott, I'm happy to open the dialogue.
Okay. Thanks for the summary, Dave. I think it's an appropriate time to maybe go back and talk about, since this is going to be the year of change, obviously you came on board last spring, maybe it was, what was it, March or April or something?
Yeah.
You've had a chance now to be in the seat long enough to get to know a different company with different types of products and coming over from General Motors, which certainly had some best practices of its own. What changes or what opportunities do you see that maybe things that your previous employer was doing better, given that it had more difficult markets, for example? 3M doesn't seem to have problem getting paid for its technology, right? I mean, it's different than most companies that we cover. Maybe you can address some of the best practices or things.
Sure
that you want to bring to the table that can help.
Yeah, I would say it's interesting, Scott. I think what's unique about 3M is really the business model, which is, as we talk about all the time, highly focused on the value of bringing new technology and innovation to the market. What you see is a combination of, we talk about a lot in the technical space about innovation, about bringing new products, about solving customer problems. But I think what's underappreciated is there's a very substantial level of commercial innovation that's going on all the time. So what you see is not only on the technical side, but the business teams, as they're coming up with these new products, they're trying to figure out, okay, what's the right business model to go to market with? Where do we create value for our customers as well as deliver profitability for the company? How do we construct that business model for this new segment, or where can we enter? And it's very unique, actually, and it works very well because there's this collaboration going on continuously between the technical community and the commercial side to get these things out and make them commercially successful, which works very well and I think is unique from any company that I've seen.
Well, let's delve into that a little bit.
Sure.
I mean, we have somewhat the same question we always ask for Danaher. I mean, 3M and Danaher are very unique companies where about 6% of sales in R&D, at least minimum 5% of sales in R&D, fairly strong commitment to the process.
Right.
And you see it in the margins. You definitely see it in the margins.
Right.
You don't always see it in the growth rates. And I think if you took a look at the core growth through the cycle of the average industrial company, and then you took a look at Danaher and 3M, it's pretty comparable. You might have slight advantage, but you definitely see it in the margins. So the question is, how and when can you take it from just being a margin defensive spend, which I don't want to diminish the importance of that. It's obviously critically important. Having high gross margins in this industry is obviously extraordinarily important. But when can you see it in the growth rate also?
Yeah, okay. Actually, what I would argue, Scott, is we're seeing that growth rate improve. If you look at our operating results last year, excluding electronics, which was in a downturn, we delivered 5% organic volume and 6% overall growth in the other segments of the business, despite what was a weaker economy. So we're seeing right now an improvement in our growth rate. And what's driving that? A few things. One is, what we're seeing is, as we develop this regional self-sufficiency, what you can see is, traditionally, in many of these countries, the company has been a selling operation where basically the guys in country were going to the big 3M catalog and looking as to what products were available that they could offer to those local customers. Now what you see happening is when you have a research lab in country, manned by people who speak the local language, can understand the requirements of the customers, and secondly, when they have available to them a manufacturing capability locally where they can go in working with customers and develop products that then they can do some test runs on to modify and come up with solutions for those customers, that is very powerful for us. And we're starting to see that impacting our growth, but what clearly will be true is as we continue to build out the model, we think that'll give us a sustainable higher growth rate going forward. So applying the 3M business model, what we see is in every country, as we get a deeper capability around the world, that business model works very effectively. So we think it's going to be certainly a key driver to our success going forward.
That's interesting. I want to dig into that just for a second, and then we're going to open it up to the audience. When I think of the successes of 3M, I always think about Brazil and what a great job you've done over a long period of time in Latin America.
Sure.
Yet I look at China and say, wow, you guys could be a lot bigger in China.
Right.
It's a different market. It's kind of hard sometimes to figure out exactly where you could be bigger, I guess. There's not an obvious, I guess, from where we sit, but I'm sure from where you sit, there's probably some clear wins that you could have. I mean, talk about how much more aggressive you could get in China. Is it an issue of capital? Is it an issue of risk and just not wanting to kind of build it and then they will come, wanting to have the orders ahead of time? I mean, how do you think about that region?
No, it's a good question. Talk about China. I think importantly for us, from a sustainability perspective over time, 3M was the first foreign company in the mid-'80s to be registered in China as 100% owned operation, which we view as very important for us over time, because what's clear for us is that from an employment brand perspective, people who come to work for us understand who they're working for and what their long-term opportunity is, which is with 3M. If you look at our turnover rates in China, they're much lower than the average multinational company because we get great loyalty from our employees as 100% owned company, which we think is very important for us over time to be successful. We then built the company through these last, what is it, 25 years. You could argue, and I think it's probably true, the ramp-up for the company, for 3M, was perhaps slower for us than some others who were able to jumpstart by coming in and partnering with a local partner and immediately getting the kind of size and scale that was available with those kinds of joint venture partnerships, but perhaps over the long term might create some other complexities for them to run their businesses. We've been ramping up the business over these years. What happens then is as you get to a certain critical mass of size and capability where you can then start to localize your R&D, your manufacturing, which we've been doing quite aggressively, you see then we have a chance to really ramp up that growth and capability on a sustainable basis. We've been very pleased with the growth rate we're experiencing in China. Our strategy is largely China for China, so it's not been built out as an export base looking for a labor arbitrage, but rather we look at the business activity there in terms of our local opportunities. If you look at the profile of the business, which is again quite typical of how our business model evolves, right now the business in China is predominantly one which is an industrial and electronics business, so selling to customers in China in that space. Now our key focus has been and continues to be to build out more aggressively our consumer and our healthcare businesses because we see the economy evolving to more of a consumer domestically oriented economy. We're building up our brand presence and our capability and our channel presence in China. As the economy shifts, we'll be able to grow with it, and as it rebalances, we'll be ready to take advantage of that. We think it's a good model for the company. As you said, I think it's right. It's a patient model for long-term success, but we think it's also the right one for the company that gives us a sustainability, both in terms of growth and in terms of profitability. We like the model, and we think it's going to work. It's working now.
Okay.
Just by way of comparison, we first entered Brazil in the early 1940s, so probably went through some similar early transitions, and now is a pretty successful subsidiary for us.
Right. I think we have enough people now where we could do the first audience response system question. Let's do question one, please. We'll just rip through a couple of these pretty quickly. Let's get a sense of the audience. Do you currently own the stock? I think you guys are familiar with what to do yesterday. Just press the button one, two, three, or four. You don't have to press enter. I think Dave Farr yesterday from Emerson called it the dating game.
Jeopardy.
I reminded him that we're not dating. Okay. 19%. Yes, that's pretty consistent with what we saw yesterday with a lot of the companies were about 20%-25%, so pretty close. All right, let's go to number two. What's your general bias towards the stock right now? Perfect. Okay. Positive, negative, and neutral, pretty balanced. Okay.
Right down the middle.
It's not completely inconsistent with, again, what we saw yesterday. Let's go to question number three. In your opinion, through-cycle revenue growth for 3M will be above peers, in line with peers, or below peers? One, two, or three? Should be fairly interesting. We're getting right about 30 responses, so it's pretty close to statistical significance. Above peers, in line, and below. Okay, fairly skeptical, guys. Going to have some proving to do. Let's do the last... Let's do question five, please, because I want to talk about cash reinvestment. I think that would be a great topic to approach. Okay. In your opinion, what should 3M do with excess cash? Bolt-on M&A, larger M&A, share repo, dividends, debt pay down. Let's do it now. Okay, share repurchases wins, and then tied the rest, dividends, larger M&A, bolt-on M&A. All right, so let's approach this. Shareholders, that's an interesting one. I mean, I'm not sure what to take out of that other than the fact that people have different views on what, as I'm sure you experience in your meetings with your shareholders on a regular basis.
My read is they'd like us to do all of the above.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting time right now because in a yield-hungry world, paying a dividend seems to be something that's getting increasingly more attention,
sure.
And we're getting a lot of phone calls on that. Yet a lot of traditional fund shops would, you know, they don't care whether you buy back stock or pay a dividend, and in many ways would rather have you buy back stock, just increase the liquidity. I don't think you guys have a liquidity issue, so I don't necessarily know why. But can you address what you guys
sure,
want to
how
do
we think about capital
yeah.
allocation? I would say, quite honestly, the good news for us is the company has very strong cash flow generating capability, and that's true year in and year out through the cycle. So the good news for us is we're able to basically strongly fund both our internal growth opportunities, which is where we would prefer to deploy money first and foremost, is when we see good opportunities for organic growth. We fund those through capital and R&D. You commented on that. We think it's critical to our ongoing success to keep our R&D investment at a high level, substantially above the peer set, is core to the business model of 3M. As well as I've talked about, building out, which is still unfinished business, but building out really a global model that's not only with two-thirds of our sales outside the U.S. And rising, but also having an internal capability in terms of also producing it where we sell it. So we continue to invest heavily there. And first and foremost, we think that's the best use of our capital. Secondly, we think of an important element of the higher growth that we're seeking to achieve is in the acquisition space. We've done over 60 transactions here in the last 5 years. We've deployed over $6 billion of our capital towards that purpose. In terms of large versus small, we look across the board. If you think about the 3M business model, we're a business, a $30 billion company with basically 40 different businesses. So think about a division with, on average, $1 billion of sales. For them to do a deal that's a couple hundred million dollars of additional sales is a big deal for them. So you most frequently see what are bolt-on transactions that fit with the business model. But we do look at, we think it's important for us at the corporate level to look at larger, potentially transformational deals for the company. So we look at those. You haven't seen those things happen really at all because, frankly, to get those to work right for us, they're typically now starting to cross more than one of our businesses, and we're quite cautious about doing those types of transactions. But we continue to look, and if we see the right opportunity, we would pursue. Acquisitions continues to be an important part of the strategy, and certainly we have the capital availability to pursue those. Finally, returning funds to our shareholders. As I said, we were in a position now where we raised that return of capital to our shareholders quite substantially last year through increased buyback, as well as we increased our dividend again last year. This year, we announced a 7% dividend increase here after the February board meeting. We view those as a combination. We think for us, the right combination is a good offer on the dividend as well as on a discretionary basis, taking advantage of opportunities to buy back our shares. If I may, and then finally, not to be ignored, we do have a substantial pension liability. With the declining interest rates here in 2011, our liabilities did increase. So we're deploying about $800 to $1 billion of funds towards funding our pension fund this year, including a portion that's front-loaded in 2012.
Let's open it up to the audience. If there's any questions early in the morning. Up front, please. You guys want to just use the device?
On capital allocation, could you just talk a little bit about your recent deal with Avery, kind of the strategy there and what you look to accomplish with
sure.
that and maybe next steps there as well, but
yeah,
talk
good.
A little bit about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so on, I think it was January 3rd, first working day of the year, we announced the acquisition of Avery's office products business. It's a discussion that had been going on for some time. From our perspective, there was an obvious strategic alignment with our own office products business. We think that by acquiring that business, we can bring some innovation to the segment, which is, we would argue, perhaps not as actively innovative as it could be. As you probably know, we had entered the segment ourselves over the last couple of years, and because we saw it as an attractive segment for the company. If you look at it, what's the opportunity? This is an opportunity that's more of one of scale and leverage for the company. It's a space we're obviously in certain parts of that segment, so we can see there's some significant opportunities to get additional scale and synergies as we have a sales force that has a common customer base. Likewise, we think there's a big opportunity for us to expand the reach of that activity globally, as we have a very strong global presence around the world in the office product space. And this will be complementary to an acquisition we did in Japan, the A1 business, which is a label business where we've had very good success, and we can see again, some synergies there as we build out the portfolio. So it's in a lower growth space, but we think it fits with the model. And as we look at acquisitions, we expect in the future to be doing a combination of ones that give us scale and leverage, like the Avery deal, as well as continuing to look for opportunities for bolt-ons in higher growth spaces that can help the growth rate of the company. We're going through right now, Avery is an antitrust review. I have no news on that, but we expect that according to the schedule, our best information would indicate that we would expect to be closing the transaction in the second half of this year or perhaps a little bit sooner than that.
Next question. Go ahead, in the back.
Over the course of 2011, in my opinion, the story moved from an organic growth story to more of coming into 12, a margin protection story. You guys are more focused on protecting on expense leverage as opposed to revenue growth. Can you talk about, just give us some comfort around how much expense cushion you have to protect guidance this year, and then when we'll start seeing organic growth really come back and what it takes?
I'm not sure I heard all of it, but I think the point being, we moved from an economic environment where the economy was growing at a level that could support our own growth
moving into a more difficult economic environment in the second half of 2011 and now into the first half of 2012, and what are we doing about that, and how are we managing the business? What I would tell you is, if you look at the company, we have, as you know, very good margins, and to protect those margins, we don't have the luxury to wait 6 months to sort of observe and figure out whether this change in the economic environment is real. We need to react to that very quickly to preserve the kinds of margins and returns that we expect from the business. We did that as we saw the economy shifting, in particular electronics segment, as well as Western Europe as we moved into the second half of last year. What happens then is we shift the stance of the business to be one where on the margin we are making decisions which are around protecting those margins and having to defer, in some cases, some of the growth investments that we'd like to be making, but we just don't see the opportunity right now. That being said, as Scott had talked about, and as you would know, this is not talking about significant reductions in our R&D investment because that's the lifeblood of the company. On the margin, with discretionary decisions that we make, we're again making decisions right now that are reflecting the fact that in the very near term, the growth opportunities are not as strong. The second area that we're looking at, which is lining up for us a little more positively this year, is a contributor to margin protection, is the combination of material cost pressure and price movement. Last year, we had very significant raw material cost increases. I think we ended up the year somewhere north of 4% raw material cost inflation, which we were able to offset with 1% price. We exited the year in the fourth quarter with 2% price performance. One of the contributors to protecting margin right now is we have good price performance and some carryover that we're experiencing now into 2012 in what we had been expecting to be and still think will be a moderating raw material cost inflation environment. A couple factors, one being then protecting margins by managing more aggressively our cost footprint, and then secondly, the opportunity, we think we've got about a $0.10-$0.15 per share positive performance as between price and raw materials in 2012. We've said 21%-22.5% margins. We feel very good about our ability to deliver on that in 2012.
Let's go to question six on the audience response system. Curious to hear, this is always an issue that comes up with 3M, what the audience thinks the optimal capital structure for 3M. Let's give this one a try. Okay. 20%-30%, followed by 30%-40%. A couple people more aggressively at 40%+. This begs the obvious question of, you can borrow money for very little. Why not borrow money to contribute to the pension plan and use a little bit of leverage? There's obviously an arbitrage.
Sure. Yeah. How do we think about the balance sheet and the strength of the business? What I would say first and foremost is what's quite clear to us is the business model works very well for 3M with a strong balance sheet. That's a little bit less quantitative and more qualitative, which is having the confidence as we did in 2008 and 2009 through when we were reading the headlines, which were announcing the end of the world as we knew it, we were able to have the confidence in that environment to continue to invest heavily in the business, continue to maintain both our investment from a capital perspective as well as on R&D. We did that, and it was a very successful process process that we went through in that time. We come into the business, into an economic cycle with a bias towards maintaining a strong balance sheet because we think it matches nicely with the business model. Would we and could we consider to deploy capital more aggressively? The answer is yes, we could and we would under the right circumstances. If we had an opportunity for a transformational type acquisition, we would consider the ability, and we would consider to fund that. We do believe that funding the pension fund is appropriate for the company to keep it well-funded, which is why we're increasing the contributions this year. I'm also cautious not to get us massively overfunded, and frankly, I don't believe this low interest rate environment and discount rate is going to continue forever. So we think we've got the right balance right now, which is targeting somewhere around the 100% funded level, which is what we're doing right now. So the answer is we like the business model to match between the balance sheet and our business. Do we have flexibility? The answer is yes. What we want to do is use that flexibility consciously because we think it would be inappropriate for us to wake up one day and find that our leverage has increased and our ratings have declined by accident. So we look at that very purposely, and we certainly are conscious of the need to deploy capital appropriately.
Makes sense. Let's go to question seven, because I think this is interesting yesterday to see some of the results. And in your opinion, what multiple on earnings, this is 2012 earnings, should 3M trade? I won't make any commentary until after we do it. Okay. 13 to 16 times is kind of the which is not dissimilar to really kind of where you're trading now, but that's similar to what we had yesterday. The only commentary I'd make is that I think most people are finding the audience answers to be a little lower than they thought it would be. In fact, we had a company yesterday which trades at 21 times earnings where the answer was 15, which clearly means the audience doesn't view this low-rate environment to be a permanent thing, right? Because if you thought this low-rate environment would be a permanent thing, I think, when I first got into this business, I remember a very wise strategist, Barton Biggs, said in a low interest rate environment, first class companies should trade at 20 times earnings. I remember him saying that. And I think most people in the audience would kind of laugh at that notion, but in a 1% interest rate environment, it's probably not that far off reality, right?
Right. If it's permanent.
Okay. Well, let's wrap it up with that. Thank you. David and Matt, thank you everybody for waking up early this morning and participating, and we'll see you in the next session.